The Terrain of Truth, Rethinking Meningitis and the Roots of Health. Few diagnoses strike fear into the hearts of parents like meningitis. Stories of sudden fever, rapid decline, and devastating consequences circulate like folklore, reinforced by headlines and public health campaigns. Although U.S. rates of meningitis have fallen precipitously since the 1990s, health officials continue to echo this urgency, presenting vaccines as the surest line of meningitis defense and unquestionable safeguard against catastrophe. Fear, while a potent motivator, often narrows the lens through which we see. What gets lost when this type of anxiety becomes the frame? And what truths emerge when we begin to look more closely, not just at the disease, but at the terrain in which it takes hold? It's important to explore the medical framework that officials use to define meningitis, for this foundation shapes the public's perceptions and responses. The official story, meningitis, also called spinal meningitis, refers to inflammation of the membranes that cover and protect the brain and spinal cord, known as the meninges. These membranes play a vital role in shielding the central nervous system, offering structural support and housing nerves, blood vessels, and cerebrospinal fluid. According to the World Health Organization, WHO, and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, meningitis can be acute, defined by sudden onset and severity, or chronic, symptoms lasting a month or more, and either infectious caused by bacteria, viruses, fungi or parasites, or non-infectious, triggered by factors such as head injuries or cancer. 2-4. Interestingly, medicine also acknowledges one form of iatrogenic meningitis, called drug-induced aseptic meningitis, DIAM, linked to medications like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, and antibiotics. The perceived cause and the duration of a person's symptoms determine how a meningitis case gets classified. Public health organizations state that the most common form is viral meningitis. In addition to enteroviruses, we are told that a wide range of other viruses can cause meningitis, including herpes simplex, types 1 and 2, varicella zoster, chickenpox, Epstein-Barr, mumps, measles, influenza, HIV, and West Nile. 6. Bacterial meningitis is described as far less common, but significantly more dangerous, requiring urgent medical care due to its rapid progression and potential for severe complications and even death. The most common symptoms attributed to meningitis include sudden fever, headache, and a stiff neck. Other frequently reported symptoms are nausea, vomiting, increased sensitivity to light, photophobia, and confusion or difficulty concentrating. As the illness progresses, individuals may experience seizures, sleepiness, or difficulty waking, and, in severe cases, coma. In babies, instead of these classic symptoms, meningitis is said to manifest as unusual fussiness, sleepiness, and a bulging soft spot, fontanelle, on the head. Infants may also be hard to comfort and may feed poorly. Public health officials assert that both bacterial and viral meningitis are contagious, that is, spread through various forms of close personal contact, bacterial, or via coughing, sneezing, or touch, viral, Dautini 8. As with other diseases of recent memory, they also warn that a person can transmit the bacterium or virus in question while being asymptomatic themselves. 9. Following this all-too-familiar logic, warnings about meningitis go hand-in-hand with promotion of certain vaccines, particularly for populations deemed to be more at risk, such as infants, young children, and college students. 10. First-year students living in campus housing are a particular target for vaccination because shared or crowded living conditions are said to facilitate bacterial and viral transmission. In reality, the CDC's own surveillance data indicate that the risk of meningitis in adolescents and young adults is exceedingly low. In 2003, the Enhanced Meningococcal Disease Surveillance, EMDS system, received reports of 437 confirmed and probable meningitis cases across all age groups, only 38, 8.7% of which, were in 16 to 23-year-olds. 11, more than half of all confirmed and probable cases, 54%, were in adults aged 45 or older. See sidebar below for a look at the doubtful methods used to count a case as confirmed or probable. Revisiting germ theory again, One of the most persistent and least questioned assumptions about meningitis is the germ theory-derived belief that most types of meningitis are contagious. Germ theory, popularized by Louis Pasteur in the 19th century, posits that bacteria and viruses invade the body and cause disease. These are the ideas that gave rise to the pharmaceutical model we live with today. One disease, one microbe, one drug or vaccine. As Daniel Reuters explains in Can You Catch a Cold? Untold History and Human Experiments, in a chapter titled Bechamp versus Pasteur. Pasteur's contemporary, Antoine Bechamp, proposed a radically different theory. Bechamp held that disease originates from within the body and that microbes represent a symptom of illness, not the cause. He believed that tiny particles in the blood, which he called microzymas, were the fundamental building blocks of life and could transform into various microbial forms depending on the condition of the body's internal terrain. According to this concept, known as pleomorphism, bacteria and other microbes do not exist in fixed forms, but adapt based on what is going on in their environment. When the body is under stress from toxins, nutritional deficiencies, trauma, or other insults, microorganisms may change form to metabolize toxins and break down damaged tissue. In this model, bacteria are not enemies to eradicate, but an adaptive cleanup crew that supports the body's efforts to return to equilibrium. Tom Cowan and Sally Fallon Morell suggest in The Contagion Myth that what we call infectious disease is actually a misunderstood and misrepresented detoxification process. They also point to historical examples of diseases such as scurvy, beriberi, and pellagra, once thought to be infectious, later shown to be caused by nutrient deficiencies. Within this framework, outbreaks of illness arise not from contagion, but from shared exposures, environmental conditions, or physiological stress. In Can You Catch a Cold? Reuters details, in a lengthy appendix, investigators' repeated failure in over 200 experiments to demonstrate person-to-person transmission of influenza and other diseases. Even when directly exposing healthy subjects to the blood, mucus, saliva, or breath of the sick. If one accepts that microbes are nature's cleanup crew, it is evident that our focus should move away from eradication and toward restoration, strengthening the body's natural defenses through lifestyle and environmental changes, and supporting the body's innate capacity to maintain or restore a healthy internal environment. The human body is not static. It is a responsive, self-regulating system that continuously adapts to internal and external stimuli to preserve balance. This dynamic process, homeostasis, allows the body to heal, detoxify, and recover. History has taught us the significance of improved sanitation, living conditions, and nutrition. Those are the factors that led to the steep declines documented for major 19th and early 20th century killers such as cholera, typhoid, and scarlet fever. From this perspective, let's consider some of the real reasons why we might observe illness in college students. Many of today's students are navigating immense mental, emotional, and physical stress. Poor sleep, erratic eating habits, a diet of mostly processed food, alcohol and drug use, high academic and social pressure, and disconnection from nature are factors that can compromise students' terrain and weaken their resilience. Vaccine promotion, a core feature of the meningitis narrative. If microbial expression is a response to internal imbalance rather than the root cause of disease, then the logic of targeting microbes with vaccines and promoting vaccination as the first and often only line of defense demands close scrutiny. When it comes to meningitis, public health organizations' logic is particularly flawed because although meningitis vaccines target only certain bacterial strains and not putative viral or fungal causes, officials persist in presenting vaccination as the most effective preventive measure. Public health agencies hold four types of bacteria responsible for most cases of bacterial meningitis and for at least half of all meningitis deaths globally: Neisseria meningitidis, meningococcus, Streptococcus pneumoniae, pneumococcus, Haemophilus influenzae type B, CHIB, and Streptococcus agalactiae, group B, Streptococcus or GBS. 3. Existing meningococcal conjugate, pneumococcal conjugate, and HIB vaccines target the first three. And vaccine manufacturers also have a maternal vaccine within their sites to address risks of mother-to-child transmission of GBS during childbirth, N16. In the U.S., there are three types of meningococcal vaccines and seven different approved formulations to address different combinations of bacterial strains, called serogroups, two monovalent MenB vaccines, Bexsero and Trumenba, three quadrivalent MenACTUY vaccines, Menactra, Menquad Phi, and Menveo, and approved in 2023 and 2025, respectively, two pentavalent MenABCWY vaccines, Penbrya and Penmenvy, 10-9. The CDC recommends routine vaccination with multiple doses of PCV and Hib vaccines in the first 15 months of life. Two doses of meningococcal vaccine for preteens and teens at ages 11 to 12 and 16. 20. One dose of meningococcal vaccine for military recruits and first-year college students living in dorms, if not previously vaccinated at age 16 or older, and PCV vaccination for adults age 50 years or older, with recommendations varying according to vaccination history. 21, 22. There are additional meningococcal recommendations for children and adults with certain medical conditions, including babies as young as 2 months of age, as well as for children and adults traveling to countries with hyperendemic or epidemic meningococcal disease. The WHO has preferentially recommended mass vaccination with the pentavalent MEN5CV vaccine in Africa since 2023, arguing that the vaccine can conquer the so-called African meningitis belt. In lower-risk settings, WHO's somewhat more selective approach targets travelers, immunocompromised individuals, and certain occupational groups, meningitis vaccine ingredients, and adverse events. As Table 1 shows, the disclosed ingredients of meningococcal vaccines approved in the U.S. include problematic substances such as aluminum adjuvants, formaldehyde, polysorbate 80, and sodium chloride. 13-24, all of these come with risks, particularly when injected. The Mayo Clinic warns, for example, that injected sodium chloride can cause serious allergic or infusion reactions, fluid overload and overhydration, leading to fluid in the lungs, and low or high blood sodium levels associated with a variety of serious problems. As for aluminum adjuvants, peer-reviewed studies link aluminum to neurotoxicity, allergic sensitization, and autoimmune responses effects, especially troubling for infants and young children with developing brains and immune systems. 26. Unlike aluminum that is ingested, most of which is poorly absorbed and RAP idly excreted, injected aluminum bypasses the body's natural filtering mechanisms, entering directly into tissues and circulation where it can accumulate and persist. For more on aluminum adjuvants, see the article by Dr. Christopher Shaw in this issue of Wise Traditions. Vaccine manufacturers list a wide range of adverse reactions to meningococcal vaccines in their package inserts, reported in clinical trials, or during post-marketing surveillance, 7028, ranging from milder symptoms like injection site pain and swelling, fatigue, nausea, and fainting, to more severe outcomes such as seizures, anaphylaxis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, and mystery conditions like Kawasaki disease. Internationally, administration of a meningococcal vaccine developed specifically for use in sub-Saharan Africa, called Menafrivac, left at least 40 of 500 Chadian children paralyzed in 2013. 30. In a 2022 paper, an enthusiastic Italian researcher extolled Menafrivac's high immunogenicity, ability to stir up an immune response, making no mention of adverse events. In the U.S., adverse events following vaccination are reported through the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VARS. Although VAERS data do not establish causation, the volume and severity of reports submitted following meningitis-related vaccination raise valid concerns, particularly given that severe meningitis is rare in the U.S. As of July 25, 2025, nearly 263,000 reports had been filed related to meningitis-associated vaccines, Hib-containing, pneumococcal, and meningococcal vaccines combined, G2, with almost 46,000 classified as serious. These include hospitalizations, permanent disability and deaths, with reported symptoms ranging from myocarditis and seizures to multisystem inflammatory syndromes. Recall, too, that vaccine injuries are vastly underreported. A government-funded study by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare found that VAERS captures fewer than 1% of adverse events. Word about the risks of meningococcal vaccines has trickled out. One law firm openly describes a host of dangerous meningococcal vaccine side effects on its website, citing a nearly threefold risk of developing Bell's palsy or another neurological disorder within 12 weeks of the first dose. Duty 4. The attorneys also warn that the dangers increase significantly when the meningitis vaccine is administered in conjunction with another vaccination, which is often the case. Seeing through the fear, research published in July 2025 reveals that children in the United States face an 80% higher risk of death compared to their peers in other industrialized nations, with nearly half receiving ongoing medical treatment for chronic health issues. The study, published in JAMA, analyzed hundreds of millions of health records and found that within the U.S., children were 15 to 20% more likely to have a chronic condition as of 2023 compared to 2011, including conditions like autism and developmental delays. The study's first author told CNN, "In the 90s, when I started taking care of children, I hardly ever saw one with a chronic condition. In absurd response, we are now witnessing the widespread normalization of childhood chronic illness, as evidenced by the debut of Mattel's diabetic Barbie, 7, who comes complete with an insulin pump and teaches children that disease is not only normal, but to be expected." Mainstream news coverage of the JAMA study was careful to remain within the Overton window, steering clear of discussing the changes in the childhood vaccine schedule that have coincided with the deterioration in children's health. Instead, and around the same time, one of the Washington Post's most reliable vaccine cheerleaders came out with a new fear-mongering article about meningitis titled, "Meningitis B is Rare but Deadly. Parents Who Lost Children to the Disease Wonder Why No One Mentioned a Vaccine." 38. Adding symbolic weight to this narrative, a group called Meningitis Awareness promotes World Meningitis Day, held annually on October 5th, to reinforce the perception of meningitis as an urgent threat solvable only through vaccination. More than just a medical tool, vaccination is marketed as a moral imperative, particularly for populations deemed high risk. In July 2025, FDA signaled the continuation of this type of messaging, approving Moderna's Spikevax for vulnerable infants and children. 40. As with COVID-19, messaging about meningitis and other diseases elevates fear, while dismissing terrain theory and positioning pharmaceutical solutions as both inevitable and unassailable. This is not a science-based model of health, but a compliance-based system shaped by corporate and other more hidden interests. If vaccines were truly safe and effective, there would be no need to coerce. Until recently, the fear and guilt that are deeply embedded in vaccine messaging, whether about meningitis, measles, or other diseases, have been all too effective in promoting compliance and persuading the public that pharmaceutical interventions are the only path to safety. This may be changing. A recent survey found that the percentage of U.S. adults supporting vaccine exemptions, whether for philosophical, religious, or medical reasons, roughly doubled between 2019 and 2025. 41. As more people step back, ask hard questions, and seek a deeper understanding of what it truly means to be healthy, the germ theory paradigm is cracking. This may be why a panicked American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP, is now lobbying for federal mandates on childhood vaccines, seeking to eliminate all non-medical exemptions. We do not need another booster or another fear-based campaign. We need a new model, one that honors informed consent, supports vitality, and recognizes the sacred individuality of each human being. We don't need to fine-tune a broken system. We need to build something new. Sidebars. How does the CDC define meningitis cases? According to the CDC, a confirmed case of meningitis involves either isolation of Neisseria meningitidis or detection of N. meningitidis by PCR from a normally sterile body site. 1043, probable cases are defined as detection of N. meningitidis antigen by latex agglutination or immunohistochemistry. As faithful readers of wise traditions know, there is ample reason to question the use of these methods for purposes of valid diagnosis. Interestingly, CDC does not discuss how it monitors viral meningitis cases or cases attributed to the other bacterial species that it says are common causes of meningitis. Instead, adopting a catch-all approach, the agency tells healthcare providers to maintain a heightened index of suspicion and be aware of atypical presentations of meningitis, stating that patients may present without typical meningitis symptoms. Not surprisingly, the CDC's other key recommendation is to ensure up-to-date vaccination. Are they trying to hide something? Though regulatory agencies project confidence about the U.S. vaccine program, its scientific underpinnings, particularly as regards safety in children, are surprisingly incomplete. Consider the following. There has never been a large-scale, government-funded study with a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled design to compare long-term health outcomes between fully vaccinated and completely unvaccinated children. 45. However, over 100 smaller-scale vax-unvax studies published in the peer-reviewed literature point to superior health outcomes in children and adults who forgo some or all vaccines. Most vaccine safety trials use another vaccine or an adjuvanted solution as the comparison, rather than an inert placebo such as saline, limiting their validity. Health providers administer vaccines according to complex schedules that result in multiple exposures to various ingredients. Yet no study has assessed the combined toxicological impact of the full U.S. childhood vaccination schedule as actually given. Independent research increasingly indicates that vaccines and vaccine ingredients can interact synergistically, raising toxicity in ways that trials of individual ingredients or vaccines are not designed to detect. And 49, the widely cited concept of vaccine-induced immune memory remains theoretical. It has never been directly observed or measured in a living human system over time. Pre-licensure trials routinely exclude the populations most vulnerable to vaccine injury, such as pregnant women and children with cancer, autoimmune disease, or diabetes. Yet after a vaccine receives approval, officials often recommend that these same high-risk individuals be first in line to receive it. Most safety studies monitor participants for only days or weeks, periods too brief to permit detection of long-term effects or delayed adverse events. Post-licensure surveillance, meanwhile, is passive and incomplete, capturing only a fraction of incidents. In any other area of medicine, such scientific gaps would halt widespread use. But with vaccines, the public is expected to let assumptions of safety stand in for rigorous proof. What about Hib-containing vaccines? CDC claims that Haemophilus influenzae type B, HIB, was the leading cause of bacterial meningitis prior to the introduction of effective vaccines. As with many other CDC assertions, this merits a closer look. In the early 1980s, before the vaccine's rollout, CDC received reports of roughly 20,000 HIB cases annually, about 40 to 50 per 100,000, largely in children under 5. 51. However, a Swedish study showed that in children exclusively breastfed for at least 13 weeks, the pre-vaccine risk of serious outcomes from this low-incidence disease was minimal, about 1 in 143,000. The same cannot be said about current HIB vaccines, ACT-HIB, Hyberix, PEDVAX-HIB, and combination products like Pentacell and Vaxilis, which contain aluminum and other adjuvants. The aluminum adjuvants are present in amounts, for example, 225 mcg in PEDVAX-HIB, that vastly exceed safe daily exposure levels for infants, or 156. As with other childhood vaccines, package inserts also disclose that no HIB vaccine has been evaluated for carcinogenic or mutagenic potential, or potential to impair fertility. Reported HIB vaccine side effects range from fever, vomiting, ear infections, rash and upper respiratory infections to seizures, conservatively estimated at 1 in 1,098 children, type 1 diabetes, 1 in 1,852 after 4 doses, neurological disorders, and so-called sudden infant death syndrome. 57. As of July 25, 2025, Veyers had received almost 98,000 reports of adverse events following HIB vaccination, including over 2,900 deaths. 54. The former Institute of Medicine, now called the National Academy of Medicine, admitted in 1994 that available evidence can neither prove nor disprove links between HIB vaccination and several severe outcomes. and there is no research to confirm CDC's claim that Hib vaccines cause less permanent disability and death than Hib itself. 52. On the contrary, studies show that combination vaccines that include a Hib component are associated with an alarming increase in the risk of infant death. However, it is impossible to know whether Hib, another vaccine component, or the interaction of various ingredients is responsible.